Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hello everybody and welcome back to the Triple Jump Podcast. It's a video game podcast. My name is Ben.
And my name is Peter. Hello, Ben.
Hello, Peter. How are you doing this morning?
I'm doing all right, thank you. Yeah, I'm doing pretty good. Yes, it started raining yesterday for the first time in a long time.
What a miserable day.
That was news. Mm-hmm. You know, he's still, although lockdown itself is over, we're still working from home, so you still have to just take any kind of, not even pleasure, but just vague interest in anything when anything happens that's not just you getting up and going to your desk and then going to bed.
Yeah.
So it rained yesterday is my takeaway from that.
That's the big news. Mm-hmm. I've got some pretty big news today.
Yeah?
New towels.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Is that what you just answered from before we started recording? Someone arrived at the door.
You know what? That wasn't all.
What? What else?
New bedspread.
New bedspread. We got a new bedspread recently as well.
What color?
White with like leaves and animals on it.
Oh, interesting.
What's yours?
Mine's sort of like I can't remember. It's like sort of there's a yellow pattern on it, but it's also I think a bit blue. I don't really know. It looks like a grown-up bedspread.
Right, yeah.
So I can get rid of my... I'm trying to think of something. What's something the children like? My Spider-Man bedspread.
My SpongeBob bedspread.
That's it. That's a guy that the kids love and also the young adults.
Yeah.
So yeah, huge day. Huge day for me. Got to put on a big wash later. Get those all clean, you know? Okay. And then put them on my bed. Hugely exciting day.
Oh my God, I've just had a very... violent message via text. In all caps, the subject is message, and the body is dentistry has been suspended.
Oh no.
All appointments have been cancelled. I was going to go for a checkup. I've not been for a year and a half, so I thought may as well go. But so that's more news. Anyway, this is a video game podcast, but dentistry has been suspended, just so you all know.
That's really sad. Are they sponsoring the podcast this week?
Yeah, you know what? Screw our other ad read. We've actually got a brand new sponsor here. It's from Dentistry. And Dentistry have sponsored us because they want to get a message out to the population. Dentistry has been cancelled. Dentistry has been suspended. All appointments have been cancelled until further notice. Emergency advice contact. And then I'm not going to read that number because it might be local to my area.
Okay.
But just to let everyone know, if you were thinking of having some dentistry done at any time in the next goodness knows how long, I've not been given a duration there.
No.
But that's our sponsor this week for this video game podcast.
Why did Siri just wake up? Shush. That was weird. Is it sort of like video game adjacent in some manner? What's it called? Practice? Is it a practice owned by Dr. Mario, for example?
It could be, yeah. Let me really, really quickly try and think of some kind of...
That's fine. We've got time. I could talk more about towels if you like.
Yeah, if you could just fill.
They're sort of the same color...
Fillings.
Oh, okay. That's good. That's good. Yeah.
It's not video game adjacent. It was just.
No, it's not. That was just a little wordplay.
Yeah.
But anyway, back to towels. Mm-hmm. My towels are sort of a similar color to the bedspread. They're sort of a yellow and white kind of combination pattern.
Oh, nice.
Also got some bath mats too.
I've got one, by the way.
Okay. I'm not done, though.
Okay.
And I think I also got a sheet as well, like a new fitted sheet. Go on, go ahead.
The message comes to us via my SMS messaging system, of course, but sort of that in itself was sponsored by Cavity Rush.
Brilliant.
Thanks.
That's really good. I like that one. Yeah. Thanks. Underrated Cavity Rush.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Great game.
Yeah. It's about a girl who can give herself tooth decay in any direction.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
By the way, it's all fake.
And it's real. Oh, man. God, I thought that was going to marry two of my interests, dentistry and underrated PlayStation exclusives that mm-hmm. no one's heard of. Man, gutted. Okay, well, never mind. Next time, eh?
Yeah.
Next time. I tell you who we're really sponsored by, though. It's the wonderful patrons over at patreon.com/teamtriplejump. They support us there financially, and you can too. Oh. There are lots of different tiers available, the lowest being $1. And for that $1 per month, you also, well, I say also, you get access to the weekly podcast post where you can submit questions for this podcast. That's right. We only pull questions for this podcast from the patrons. So please do consider going and supporting us. patreon.com/teamtriplejump.
Please do. Yeah, lovely. Got a question here. Oh, well, no, I've got a question first. Where are we walking?
We are walking because I don't want it to be like some gross dentistry mouth.
Yeah.
We're walking across the shiniest, pearliest white teeth, teethy smile you've ever seen.
The really pretty smile. The ones off of the toothpaste adverts.
Yeah, the ones off of Photoshop, yeah.
Mm, yeah.
That aren't really achievable without actual chemicals that you have to apply to your mouth hole.
And then they bite into an apple at the end just to show how strong their teeth are. Yeah.
It just makes me want apples, not strong, powerful teeth.
Which, incidentally, aren't very good for your teeth, apples.
They're not.
Well, they're just quite... You have to kind of try and use some mouthwash or chew some gum or something afterwards because they're quite acidic, I think.
Really? I thought they was meant to be really good.
Oh.
No?
Well, I don't know. They might strengthen you by biting into something hard, but I think the acid juice... I don't know. I'm no dentist. I'm no dentalist.
No, you're no dentals. Okay. Well,
yeah.
Let us know, I suppose. Let's move on to question one.
Let's, for the love of God. It's from Cameron Keywood. Thank you, Cameron. Who says, "Hi, Ben and Peter. I am a trophy hunter and have nearly 375 platinums. And my proudest platinum is CTR Nitro Fueled, as the original was my favorite game growing up. But my question is, what childhood game of yours would you love to play with trophy support and earn the platinum?"
I suppose this also extends to achievements as well.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Could also be like I'm now appreciate this is not any of the answer I've written down, but I also appreciate that, you know, Nintendo should definitely implement some sort of trophy achievement system into their console, and I imagine there's a number of games that people who don't exclusively play on Nintendo hardware and are familiar with achievements and trophies. Not the people who play on Nintendo hardware exclusively have never heard of them, but I just mean in terms of they're more likely to have earned and popped trophies and achievements in other games on different systems. So they'll be aware of the incredible endorphin rush that you get.
Which, Steam have got them as well, of course.
Yes, so. Steam have got them too. So you could also apply that to Nintendo games, is what I'm trying to say.
Right, yeah, which Nintendo game? Which do you wish you had trophies? Yeah, true, true. Mm-hmm. I mean, I struggled with this in some ways because, you know, I really just play games to completion if I want to. I don't do it for a trophy, and sadly, I don't get that endorphin rush really from the trophy itself. I might get it from 100%ing a game, but it's not. They're kind of different things in some ways. So I wasn't really sure what to say here. My gut instinct was maybe my head went to the Tekken games that I used to play when I was younger, because I kind of associate them quite heavily with playing in order to 100% them, not necessarily playing them for fun. I mean, I had fun with them, but like in order to get to the 100%, you had to play with like certain characters that maybe, you know, weren't my forte. So that was a bit more of a, I'm doing this for an end goal. However, I then realized that, well, the only reason I did that anyway was to unlock all the characters. It wasn't so that I could say, look, my save file says 100%. It was, I just wanted the complete roster. So again, I don't know if the trophy would be any kind of incentive for me there. So then, I mean, other than that, my mind just went to, I guess, some of my favorite games, Secrets and Discoveries, and some of my favorite games. Maybe it would just be a nice thing to be able to say, oh yeah, this is my favorite game. I've completed it many times, and look, I've got the platinum. So, I mean, the Spyro Reignited Trilogy already has trophies now, which I do have the platinums for, just kind of incidentally, because yeah. I was going through doing everything anyway and happened to get the trophies. Crash Insane Trilogy as well also has platinum trophies. I don't have all of those, actually. So I can't even say those. So I guess I'll just go to my other fallback favorite game from childhood and say Beyond Good and Evil. Why not? Let's just go with that. But yeah, it's not really a question I can give a very good and interesting answer to, because I don't get that trophy incentivism, if that's a word.
But, I'm going to allow it.
Yeah, thank you.
I'm going to allow it. When I heard this question, I thought, well, Peter Austin, he doesn't really like trophies. He doesn't go for those. But then I also thought, well, I know that he's got the platinums in Spyro, and I know that the very few platinums he does have surely mean something to him, because he's gone so far as to actually earn them. And I know that just came naturally with Spyro, because you just did everything.
Yeah.
But I thought there's got to be something. There's got to be a game that doesn't, and yeah, a lot of your childhood favorites have now been remade.
Yeah, they've already got them.
But I thought there's got to be something. There's got to be something that if it was like it came out and it's the kind of Peter Austin game that you can 100% without killing yourself doing it, and that would surely also tie into a platinum trophy.
Well, admittedly, I also, when I read this question, you know, my gut was, oh, I don't know, no games. But then I was like, no, I also thought, no, there must be something. And I think I'm probably just struggling to think of it. You know, there are a lot of games from our respective childhoods, and there'll be something there that's not coming to mind. What I need really somewhere is just a document with a list of like every game I've ever played.
Oh,
so that
God, me too. Like this, just in general for this podcast, like I forget everything about every game I've played.
When a year has passed.
Yeah. And then someone will bring something up in a question. I'll be like, oh God, yeah, I actually played that for 3 years in my teens. And it's like, yeah. But you just completely lock it away, don't you? It's just gone.
You do.
Yeah. Congratulations to Cameron on an absurd amount of platinums, and also the Crash Team Racing Nitro Fueled Platinum as well.
Oh, I know.
Gave up on that one on the last trophy. Yeah. Cameron, do you want to do share play and just do it for me? I'll give you PSN credit. I've actually not gone with one from my childhood, because I think the biggest one would be Final Fantasy VII, and that has happened now. Although, albeit in, you know, part one.
True.
So instead, I'm going to hop forwards. Not a game from my childhood, but certainly a game that's important to me. The PS3 launch game Resistance Fall of Man came in before trophies were on PlayStation, and it never got patched to support them. And the Uncharted 1 got patched to support trophies, and a few other games as well that arrived before the trophy introduction date. But Resistance Fall of Man, one of my favorite games, never actually ended up getting any kind of trophy support. So I would love for that game to get that treatment, because I think I've done pretty much everything. There's a multiplayer mode, although obviously the servers are off now, and I played that a lot, and I know that there'd be some absolute BS multiplayer trophies. But the campaign was fantastic, and I played it through on the hardest difficulty and played it all through in co-op and stuff, and it's brilliant. It's a great game, and I would love to have that added to my virtual trinket case.
Yeah. Fantastic.
It's a shame that it never got that support. And seemingly, we're never going to get those resistance games in some kind of collection, because I don't know what they're doing over there, but it's seemingly not happening.
I'd play them. I think they look good. I missed them inside, but yeah,
really good, really good. Not, I wasn't such a big fan of Resistance 2, but 1 and 3 were fantastic. Mm. So highly recommend if they're ever in a playable, you know, form somewhere. It's probably on PlayStation now, but I don't want to stream it. Streaming is stupid.
Yeah.
It's just not high enough quality.
A little street sweeper came past my house just then. I hope you don't. Hope you didn't pick that up. But
I wish we did.
Oh, well, I didn't. I'll head out the window. Tell him to come back if you like. Come or back. Her.
Or her. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Well, there we go. Let's move on.
Let's
to what we play in.
Oh, what we play in.
It's what we play in time. Peter, what are you playing?
I've played a couple of things in a social community multiplayer style this week.
Wow.
I've engaged with other people over the internet. One of them, I can't remember if I ever got around to talking about this. I sort of hinted that I was going to be playing it, and maybe I did talk about it once, is the Jackbox style online service that me and my friends have been playing.
Yes.
I think I did talk about it once. Anyway, I've been playing more of that. It's called Backyard. And as I say, I've talked about it before, but it's got kind of a knockoff Cards Against Humanity. It's got drawing games, several of them with different rules and stuff. And it's a lot of fun. And, you know, you can have a few drinks and a few snackums and laugh at each other at how bad you are at drawing things, or, you know, at how saucy your answers are.
Whoa, steady on.
So we did a bit of that. But in terms of quote-unquote real games rather than browser games, I have been playing some Minecraft again this week.
Oh.
I got the bug, and it's actually because I saw a video recently on YouTube. I still get recommended Minecraft videos, and probably the reason I still get recommended Minecraft videos now and then is because I sometimes click on them because they have good thumbnails and titles. Mm-hmm. And I just saw someone just built this really nice little cabin in the forest, and it was like, oh yeah, that's really nice. And I thought, Minecraft. And so I got some friends together from uni, actually, who I've not spoken to for a while.
You still talk to your uni friends?
Occasionally, yeah, not very often.
It's impressive, man.
This is my... So I went to two different unis. It's the one that I went to for a year after I did my undergrad. So I sadly don't talk to my undergrad friends anymore.
That's because they're undergrad friends. They're not Stalingrad friends.
Yeah,
they?
I talk to the overgrad friends now, and that's it, exclusively. So we booted up a Minecraft server, and we're playing in like true survival mode. So we're just, you know, grabbing resources and mining and having a great time. And it's a bit scary when, you know, there are actual mobs there that can kill you. Me and you, when we've played on stream, we've not really had that. Well, we did when we first went to Nightmare Island.
Oh,
but,
God, yeah, that was terrible.
Yeah, so going down into the mines and finding some... I've not found any diamonds yet, but, you know, getting iron and redstone and stuff, and then thinking, will I die before I make it back? That's always the threat. So... Mm-hmm. That's what I've mostly dedicated all of my gaming time to this week, actually, rather than... I've not played any more Republic Commando this week at all. Not that I don't want to, but I can't put Minecraft down at the moment. And then no doubt it won't take very long before we all get bored and turn off the server, and then wait another few months before we play more Minecraft, because that's how Minecraft works for me.
Always the way it goes. I'm really sad, actually, because on the podcast a few weeks ago I was talking about picking up Minecraft with my friends, and I persuaded a few of them to get it for the first time. We're all having fun. We played twice.
Yeah.
Precisely twice. Mm-hmm. And I would have happily kept playing, but then the group chat just got dominated with, right, let's play some Warzone. Who's playing some Warzone? Let's play some...
No.
I don't want to shoot people anymore. I like socializing with hashtag the boys, and sometimes hashtag the boys' wives and partners. But I just... Warzone does not bring me any joy anymore.
No.
And
probably
and
brings
this...
fewer wives and partners along as well to the party.
Sorry?
Probably brings fewer of the wives and partners along as well to the
party. See, that's true, but actually, you know, it's it's something that they all love playing, and I can't be arsed anymore. And the big update, Peter.
Yeah.
Didn't actually do a new map. Same map. They just tweaked it slightly. So
not playing in a crater.
Not playing in a crater, and that's like supremely disappointing. And now I can't be arsed with it. I'll probably still play it occasionally. Again, just to hashtag socialize with the boys and sometimes the boys' wives and partners. But yeah, what a shame. What a waste.
Well, speaking of Warzone, which you may or may not have been playing this week, what have you been playing this week?
Not Warzone.
Ah.
All I've heard is that, it's the same map, but you know, there's like some more trees here now, and some of the buildings have changed colours, and it's like set in the 80s. And it's like, I don't care. I don't want to play it anymore. Please give me another map. This was your chance.
Yeah, it was.
Activision, this was your chance to give us another map. So, to that. I have played and finished and platinumed It Takes Two.
Oh, fantastic.
Our favourite man, Joseph Fares.
I can't wait to play that.
He is on form in this game.
Right.
It is... I put it in the similar category. I think it's better than A Way Out. Mm-hmm. But I still put his games in the same rough category as the Dark Pictures Anthology and David Quaid. Sometimes they can be a bit wonky and occasionally just downright bad. But they are so in a league of their own in that I would not wish for a world in which they did not exist. Because I actually love them. And A Way Out... It Takes Two. God, I've been confusing those two name titles all weekend.
Yeah.
It's basically a combination of Toy Story, Bug's Life, ants, any other...
That's any exactly other what it looks like.
...media
yeah.
where you're shrunk down. Mm-hmm. Or like, you know, the human world is massive. And that is inherently really fun. And it's got all the best sort of co-op working together-y bits from, say, for example, the co-op levels of Sackboy A Big Adventure, where you actively, you know, each of you have different abilities and you actually have to help each other through things. It gets surprisingly dark, like weirdly so. And there are, I think, only two occasions where a swear word is said. But I would urge extreme caution to parents that this is not a game you should play with your children. This is a game for adults.
Even though it looks like it is.
Even though it looks like it is, and even though there's a distinct lack of swearing for the vast majority of it, it's not for kids. And the message of, you know, these two parents getting divorced and being forced to reconcile after being cursed and turned into little dolls... can be a bit mixed and a bit heavy-handed at times, and perhaps almost to the point where they're practically neglectful of their child, who is the catalyst in all this. So it sends, again, some sort of pretty heavy-handed, just atypical Joseph Fares writing in more than a few instances, but it's really fun, and I actually had a great time with it. It's really pretty.
It's impossible, and quote me on this, to get tired of this game. Remember? He'll give you $1,000.
Oh, yeah. You can take this. This is a promise.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I really enjoyed it. And the good thing is now that I've bought it, you can play it online with a friend for free, I think. So we can stream that.
We definitely should.
But yeah, really enjoyed it. Great game. Finished Persona 4 Golden, by which I mean I platinumed Persona 4 Golden. I've done it.
Well done. I've
actually done it. I was just messing around in a dungeon after ticking off a few things on my checklist of things Risei needed to say out loud for that stupid trophy. And I got it, and I did it. And then it was just a couple of hours later, and I got the platinum. I feel so accomplished. It took me 7 years and 9 months to do it. Obviously with a lot of downtime in between, but I really enjoyed that. I have finished Batman Arkham City. Great game. I also didn't realize that this version included the additional story DLC, which I never played, which is set after the events of the game, and you play as Robin. That was also good.
Oh, yeah.
I like that. Further bridges the plot between Arkham City and Arkham Knight, and I'm kind of sad that I didn't play it at the time because it would have made Arkham Knight that much more impactful, but never mind. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. This game title has 7 words in it, and it's ridiculous. And each word I say, Peter, I want you to guess what the next one is. You ready?
Okay.
Shin.
Megami.
Yes. Next word.
Tensei.
Yes. Next word. It's a number.
A number. Three.
Yeah. Oh my god. Yes. Oh, next word.
That was a guess. I don't know what Shin Megami Tensei 3 is called. The.
No. It's Nocturne. Next word.
Nocturne Night with a K.
No, that's HD. Next word.
Nocturne 8. Shin Megami Tensei 3 Nocturne HD remix.
Oh, remaster. There we go. Ridiculous name. This is the series, obviously, that Persona spun off from. I've played about an hour and a half of it, and it's, God, it feels very PS2, but there is so much Persona DNA in this game.
Yeah.
I'm not sure when the remaster's out. I'm assuming it's out now. But yeah, I haven't played much of it. A lot of the sound effects and the turn-based combat, and they're called demons in this game, but they're Personas, basically.
Yeah, they're weird monsters.
The Persona series. Yeah, the designs, you know, they all carry over between the different games.
Yeah.
Interesting so far. Feels like a very, very stripped-back Persona, and this may be doing it a huge disservice, and people will get very mad at me. Feels like a very stripped-back Persona with a complete lack of social elements so far. But there's some sort of apocalypse. You get turned into a demon boy, and then you got to fight demons. So I'll dip in and out of that. We'll see how that goes. But interesting. Interesting so far.
It appeared, that series appeared multiple times in our list of saucy villains.
Oh, yeah, there's a lot. There's a lot of Personas with big old Johnsons, aren't there?
Yeah, big Wilson heads and stuff. And yeah all sorts of things.
There's a lot. I don't know where that's come from, but there we go. Finally, and you'll be interested in this, Peter.
Yeah.
When I finished Persona 4 Golden, I shut down my Vita and I put it back in the drawer. And then I felt kind of sad because it's been living on my bedside table for like 3 months. And I took it back out and I downloaded some PS1 classics that I've already bought ages ago. And I thought, it's time. I think it's time. I downloaded Crash 1, 2, and 3.
Oh, yeah.
I downloaded Castlevania Symphony of the Night. I downloaded Silent Hill. I was like, I'm going to play these because I've never played them before.
Oh, fantastic.
And I've played, like, you know, like I imagine a lot of people have with games from that came out around their childhood. I think I've played the occasional level of a Crash Bandicoot game across the years, but I've never sat down and played it. Last night, I played Crash Bandicoot 1, and I played maybe for an hour, and I completed, like, 6 or 7 levels. I beat Papu.
Yeah.
And it's good, isn't it?
It is. I mean, to be fair, that game, they get better as they go in terms of like mechanically. You know, Crash 1 is a bit wooden and wonkums and difficult, so it's definitely
sticking
with it because, yeah, that. I mean, even if I go back to Crash 1, it's a bit like, oh, he certainly moves like they'd only just invented 3D platformers, doesn't he?
Because I didn't want to say it, because I think it would come across perhaps badly that I was like, I've played this game that everyone loves, this beloved classic, and it's really hard, and they need to add more checkpoints, and I ran out of lives, and I got really cross at it. I didn't actually get really cross at it, but yeah, he can be a little difficult to land on platforms sometimes. I did find the collision detection a bit unfair with some of the obstacles that you have to jump past.
I mean, it's worse in Reignited, what's it called? The Insane Trilogy, the collision.
Wow. Okay.
The jumping's probably better in that, but the actual landing on hitboxes is worse. So it's kind of a bit of a mixture, really. But I would say that around the 6 or 7 level mark is where it starts to get really hard. When you get to, I can't remember if it's the first or the second creek level, that's where it's like, oh Jesus. I remember getting to, I think this, it was the second one of that type, and I got way further than any one of me and my siblings had ever got before, and I had one life left, and the pressure, I think I had sweat on my brow. It was like a bomb defusal scene from an action movie. I was I was just, patting myself down and stuff. Mm-hmm. And I fell in the water and died.
No.
I was furious.
Do the save points come a bit more freely in the second one? Because seemingly, as far as I can tell in the first one, can you only save in bonus stages?
Yeah, which is, again, pretty harsh.
Weird.
That's how it works. You can only save in bonus stages in that.
Okay.
But, you In the second and third games, there's just a save system in the warp room. You don't have the islands that time for those ones.
So it's less. I mean, it's still linear, but it's like you're not on a stuck path from beginning to end.
No, yeah. You can go where you like to an extent and save when you want. So yeah.
Well, I'm looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to continuing to play. I had to put it down last night after losing all my lives and then resetting to a save point like four levels before that. Ugh. Because I think I'd failed to get to the end of a couple of bonus stages in a row.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I couldn't save it, so it kicked me all the way back. And I was like, okay, I've got back up to where I was, and now I'm going to stop playing now.
Well, the thing is, as the game goes on, obviously the bonus rounds get harder and harder, so it actually gets harder to save the game as you go. But what you can do, if you want to, like, if you just want to have the experience of playing the game without actually worrying too much about, you know, completing it legit, there's like a password system to unlock certain up to a certain level in the game.
Okay.
Because it was back in the days when not everyone actually had a memory card.
Yeah, I did see the password system.
So the passwords will unlock various like levels of progression, and there's a super password to unlock everything. And so, you know, you can just do that. If you just wanted to play all the levels and try and complete them all without worrying about saving it, you know, there's just a password to unlock everything you want, if you like. So it's there if you need it, if it gets a bit tough and retro.
Cool. Well, if I hit a brick wall, I will consider that. That's good to know. It's also annoying that the PS1 Classic version, just in case people aren't aware, we've spoken a lot about PS1 Classics recently. They started re-releasing certain titles from the PS1 library during the PS3 and PSP era. And they were called PS1 Classics. And they were basically literally just ports. They weren't remasters. They weren't remakes. Nothing like that. It was just the game. No trophy support. Nothing like that. And it had basically the original file size and everything. And it was just emulated within the console of choice. And it's also supported on the Vita as well, because the Vita plays all PSP games. So that's what that means. But yeah, it doesn't support the analog stick. Does the first game support the analog stick?
No, it never did, actually. Okay, the analog stick hadn't been delivered yet.
Yeah, I thought that might be the case, because there are some emulation settings that you have access to, like making a full screen and stuff like that. And it does let you enable analog controls. But yeah, it didn't work. So that also feels very weird, playing with the D-pad.
It definitely will feel weird, throwback. But in some ways it's easier just to kind of, once you get used to that, it's nice to just have the four cardinal directions when you're on a game that is, you know, mostly just set forward, backwards, left, right, rather than diagonals. So
yeah, I suppose that's true. That's
something
true
to just get used to, I suppose.
I will report back, but I'm doing it. I'm going to do it. That's my bedtime game now.
Good
I'm
for
gonna,
you. I saw that you downloaded Tombi 1 and maybe 2 as well when you were doing your flurry of better buy this before it goes.
Yeah, unfortunately I had to buy those from the US store, and because of the way the Vita works, you can only have one account assigned to your Vita at any given time. So while I can play those, it will have to be on the PS3 rather than the Vita, which makes it a little less convenient, but I do have them. So I can play those at some point.
Lovely. Anyway. I should stream those again at some point. I'd stream like the first part of Tombi 2 and then put it down.
You should. But, rare game.
Good game. Yeah.
Peter, it's time.
Oh, finally, for question two.
Yeah, we're getting there. Moonstone Studios says, "Hello, Ben and Peter. First, thank you both for everything you do to help entertain and keep us sane during these trying times. My question to you, have either of you experienced an unusual or unique situation in regards to how you have acquired a game? The question crossed my mind when I was redeeming rewards earned through my state blood donation program to purchase Resident Evil Village.
Wow.
It felt a bit ironic that my future encounters with Lady..." Oh, here we go. What do you say, Peter?
Well, the host of the most recent Resi showcase actually said Dimitrice, which doesn't seem right, but I'm sure she would have been told the right thing. I would still want to say Dimitrescu or Dimitrescu.
Me too, it just sounds far more fancy, doesn't it?
Yeah. Dimitrice, though, apparently.
Let's call her Lady D.
Lady D, yeah.
It felt a bit ironic that my future encounters with Lady D and her vampire ilk are being paid for almost literally in blood, and was wondering if you had any similarly weird slash ironic stories in regards to acquiring a game.
Well, thank you, by the way, Moonstone Studios.
Yeah, thank you for giving blood as well. It's very important.
Thank you very much. Yeah, I've got one that's not a personal story, but a very similar story that I'm sure you know about, Ben, which is that Bandai Namco at TwitchCon a few years ago did a very similar thing. They did a blood drive to try and get people to donate blood there and then, I think, at the event. And they would give you a copy of Code Vein, which is it's a vampire game, as a reward. And I think someone else, either they did it again at another event a few months later, or someone else did it for this, did the same thing. But yeah, it's not unusual, apparently, to give blood with anyone. I have acquired one game, weirdly, that I've never played it. Do you remember I told the story, like, on the last podcast, or maybe the one before that, of how I bought a copy of Medieval from a like a convention or something, and then when I got it back to my house, it didn't work.
Yeah.
And it cost me, like, I don't know, 15 quid or something like that. What I failed to mention, what I'd forgotten about until this question was asked, is that at least, as my consolation, in the box was the disc, as well as for Medieval, just loose on top of it, for Final Fantasy VIII.
Which disc?
Well, I was going to say, is that one of the two disc games? Because
I think it's three. I think three, those games, is it? Yeah, 7 to 9, I think, are three discs.
Yeah, I don't know, because I've never played any of them, and I've never even inserted that into my console to play it. But
I hope it's part one, otherwise you can't even access it.
Yeah.
It checks your save file to see if it's you can actually use it.
So that was weird. I don't even know how that's happened, though, because surely they probably keep these things arranged alphabetically, right? So how come Final Fantasy VIII was next to Medieval? Or maybe someone accidentally slipped it into the wrong pouch and they both just got shoved into the box. I don't know how it happened, but...
They're selling you faulty products, I'm not surprised that they're shodding and storing their discs.
Exactly. So... yeah, I've never even inserted it into my PlayStation to see if it works, or I don't remember which disc it is. I might not have even kept it. I might have thrown the whole thing away. Mm-hmm. I probably wouldn't have done that, though, because people buy even just empty boxes on eBay.
Yeah, original packaging. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, so I don't think I will have done that. But
you should. Don't throw away the Rogue Final Fantasy VIII disc as well, because those can scratch up, and people... Like, I had that exact issue with Final Fantasy VII.
Yeah.
My disc one was scratched in a way that I couldn't progress past a certain point, and I had to buy another copy to continue playing. I think actually at the time I borrowed my friend's copy of Final Fantasy VII so I could get past that point. Then I saved it, and then I could go back to my copy again.
Right. Yeah, that's good. That's clever.
Yeah. So there we are.
But yeah, that's the only thing I could think of. I tried to remember if I'd like ever won a game in a competition or anything like that. And maybe digitally I have got a code or something, but not a physical one.
Yeah, I'm trying to think as well. Like I used to do a lot of surveys, like online surveys. There are various sites you can sign up for and you get points for completing surveys. And those points can then be redeemed to Nectar points, which can then be spent on eBay.
Yeah.
So through that process, I was able to actually acquire a vast number of Nectar points and then in turn eBay currency. And I definitely bought at least two Game Boys with just points earned from doing surveys, which was a bit convoluted, but there we are. And also when, I've done various pieces of voiceover work in the past, and I've definitely earmarked the money from those jobs for certain things. So I put it to one side, be like, that's going to pay for my PlayStation 5. And it's always kind of strange. It's not strange on the same level as giving blood to get a vampire game, certainly. But it's quite fun to think about that way. It's like, when I do this job, I can get a PlayStation VR.
Yeah.
As a treat to me.
So what I do with most of my VoiceOver money, I either use the PayPal account that it goes into to just whenever we're buying like Domino's or whatever.
That's a good one too.
Or mostly I try and remember to siphon it off and stick it in our wedding fund, which is very odd. Like on the day I might be sitting there thinking, I paid for some of this by, you know, saying, happy birthday, John.
There you go, John.
There you go,
John.
Can
clip that out.
Just clip that one out. Anyone called John, that's a free one.
Should we do one to let's make Lily's day. Are you ready?
Right. Yeah.
Three, two, one. Happy wedding day, Lily.
Lily,
cut those out as appropriate. I hope you're getting married on your birthday. Damn.
Yeah.
What a shame.
Like Shakespeare.
If anything, this is Lily's fault, I think. So there you go. Share that with a Lily. It's like a Coke. Share a Coke with Lily.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
Wonderful.
There we are. Let's move on because we are steaming through.
We are.
This runtime, aren't we? It's time, Peter. Do you have your paper?
I do,
Peter, for Weird News.
Weird News.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
It's weird news time. Time for some weird news. Now, Peter.
Yeah.
Have you brought the one?
I've brought the one. So I would like to thank Tired Author Dan on Twitter, not only for sharing this news article with us, but specifically for sharing it with only one of us, because then it means the other person doesn't know what to expect. Unfortunately, you happened to share it with Ben this week. And Ben happened to already have a weird news story, so he did then have to actually forward it on to me. But that's, don't let that deter anyone.
Don't
from
let that deter you.
Continuing to do the same thing, just at one of us if you can, to share a news story with us too.
I've only seen the headline though.
Yeah. So this is from Pink News. In fact, I don't have the website open because I've clipped it down to some smaller snippets because it's quite long. So I need to quickly find out the author. Ed Nightingale from Pink News. Dominatrix explains what would happen if Resident Evil 7's 9'6" Lady D actually trampled you.
Hooray!
The real journalism happening over at Weird
News. This is
News.
It. This
I mean,
is what
at
we've
Pink
been
News.
Building for.
Yeah. So here we go. She's the big, tall vampire lady of our dreams, and we can't get enough. Ever since her reveal in the yet-to-be-released game, she's been a conduit for our collective horniness, which is hyperlinked, actually. I wonder where that goes.
Oh, what's that? Tell me about... What does that mean?
pinknews.co.uk/Resident Evil Village Lady Dimitrescu Vampire Lady Thirst Twitter Meme Fun is the URL that goes to.
Oh, okay. So another it's just going to... The original reporting.
Yeah. And when Village is released next month, it's only set to get worse. But what exactly is it about her that's got us all pent up? Is it just her height? Or is it the way she stalks her castle, calling Ethan stupid man thing? The cut of her dress, the wide-brimmed hat, and the terrifying nails? Or the way she seductively laps at the blood on Ethan's freshly cut wrist, like the wild animal she is? Ed, calm down.
Wow, Ed is having a great time.
And what exactly would happen if she really did step on us? She's become a bit of a lightning rod of the people saying... She's become a bit of a lightning rod of the people saying, step on me, says Gemma Glitter, erotica writer and former dominatrix.
Gemma Glitter. Gemma Glitter. What a name. Fantastic.
People have used that as a term to talk about being attracted to someone for a while. I don't know what she's referring to.
Did you say that to did you say that to your partner when you proposed?
What?
Will you step on me forever?
Yes, I did. Oh, I see. That's what they've been using to say. Is that what people have been saying?
I think in sort of a kind of filthy wink, wink, nudge, nudge way, like, oh, she could step on
she
me.
She could walk all over me.
Oh,
yeah.
She could step on me.
Suppose you know, so.
Like, I don't think really people, I mean, some people definitely do because it's based on a real thing, but I don't think most people saying it don't want a person to tread on them.
Well, that's what this next line says from Gemma Glitter. People have used
Gemma
that as a term to talk about being attracted to someone for a while and wanting them to rough them up. But for her, it really is... I want her to step on me. There are two distinct fetishes at play here. The first is trampling, the act of stepping on someone. The other is macrophilia, a love of giants, most often women. These terms are used most frequently by those interested in feminine dominance. So let's consider the data. As confirmed by art director Tomonori Takano, Lady Dimitrice... apparently, is 2.9 meters tall, or approximately 9'6", and as fans have estimated her, and fans have estimated her shoe size to be 44 centimeters, or 17.3 inches. How exactly do the mechanics work? This is all prose, by the way. This isn't Gemma anymore.
Okay.
This is Ed. How exactly do the mechanics work? Now we're back to Gemma. Trampling has risk associated with it, absolutely, especially if you don't know what you're doing. But it's absolutely possible, says Gemma. Ed continues, there are two commonly known versions of kink, SSC, or safe, sane, and consensual, and RAC, or risk-aware consensual kink. No matter what the fantasy, it's imperative to understand the risk involved.
Yes.
A number of key factors must be considered. Does the person have the physical capacity to be stepped on? Shoes or no shoes? Where are they being stepped on? How much pressure? There are gradations to all of this. Gradations. A point of balance is also necessary to aid the stepper with balance and negate some of the unpredictability of this act. All of this is to say, when done safely under the right conditions, being stepped on is perfectly possible, no matter what the height or weight. Did I step on guys? Abso-flipping-lutely. With full weight? Absolutely. Did I ever hurt anyone? Not in ways they weren't interested in, says Gemma.
Oh, Gemma?
That's about the halfway mark of the article, but that's where we're stopping. So,
right. Okay, so basically the answer is... That was fascinating. We've all learned something today.
We have.
Perhaps we've learned some things about ourselves as we went. Who knows?
Yeah.
A fresh new perspective to go out into the
world. Any tingling feelings there as I read that to you? Log on to tinypetebigfeet.com and you'll have a great time.
Yeah, go. He'll listen to what you want.
He will.
So basically the answer here is, will she hurt you? No, because she's going to be aware of your limits and she won't do anything that would hurt you.
Yeah.
Is that basically what Gemma's saying? Even though that's definitely not the menacing intent of Lady D.
Do you have the physical capacity to be stepped on? Shoes or no shoes? Where are we being stepped on? How much pressure? And a point of balance is also necessary. So yeah, as long as she does all of those things, which I'm sure the woman who licks blood from a wrist would do... We will be fine, like the wild animal she is. Yeah, stupid little man thing.
I think that horny hyperlink should just go to a picture of the writer.
Definitely. Ed. Yeah, Ed Nightingale. Thank you, Ed.
Ed, fantastic. What a story. Yeah, so when you're playing the game, you've got to approach her and just try and engage in a conversation and set some boundaries. That's what Gemma has advised.
Yeah.
Yeah? Absolutely. I'm sure that'll go well.
Mm-hmm. Well, oh my god. Oh Jesus.
What?
I just scrolled down a little bit further and I feel like I can't not read this now. In fact, it's the very next paragraph. I'm sort of glad I stopped where I did, but also I'm disappointed that I did. Gemma continues, There's a whole difference between stepping along someone's ribs flat-footed with 450 pounds of weight, which is what she's estimated to be, on giant feet to spread the weight out, versus jamming a stiletto into someone's ball sack. That's going to go differently.
Wow. Yeah, I imagine it would.
Yeah, it probably would. Yeah. Thanks for that, Gemma.
Thanks, Gemma. You did good work.
Have you got some weird news there, Ben, to cleanse our palates?
I do. And it's really nice weird news.
Oh, good. Okay.
This was tweeted to us by Mid at Mid4134 on Twitter. Thank you, Mid. And this is an article from Rock Paper Shotgun, written by Alice O'Connor. New Mr. Men and Little Miss books are based on Assassin's Creed.
What? Is this official?
This is official.
Wow.
It's a little known fact that Ubisoft generate product ideas by writing game names, mediums, target audiences, and such on scraps of paper, popping them into a big hat, then drawing a handful to discover their next big hit. Mm-hmm. This foolproof system recently produced the combination of Assassin's Creed, book, for children but ready for parents, Mr. Men crossover, leading Ubisoft yesterday to announce a series of Mr. Men and Little Miss books starring the murderers of Assassin's Creed.
Little Miss Resquie Pat Impace.
By mixing the Assassin's Creed sense of adventure and history, it says, with the colourful and delightful designs of the Little Mr. Men, these books will appeal to both young and adult readers, Ubisoft say in their announcement. Follow Mr. Ezio, Little Miss Cassandra, and Little Miss Eivor as they each try to complete their own missions in the first three books of the series. They're illustrated by the son of creator Roger Hargreaves, who took over the series after his father's death. Adam Hargreaves later sold the rights, but he still draws it says with an apostrophe. I believe the Hello Kitty crew at Sanrio own the series these days, licensing it out for this and that. Yeah, then there's like the weirdest paragraph ever that just like goes really, really hard. And you can tell me when to stop because it's long.
Okay.
Presumably, these books will be bought with great delight by the sorts of parents who swaddle their children in merch. After changing the child's storm pooper nappy and tossing the old one in a Resident Evil nappy bin with a biohazard symbol and spray-painted zombie warning, they'll dress the little un, who they refer to as a foundling, in a Hufflepuff school uniform onesie, pop on a knitted cap with Legolas ears, then snuggle up inside a tauntaun sleeping bag with a sippy cup shaped like a Diablo mana potion to read Little Miss Eivor, watched over by a folks wooden sign which reads "Live, laugh, live long,
right,
prosper."
Stop.
Yeah, that was the end. It's a lot, isn't it?
Where's that come from? Someone's got a real problem.
They're really trying incredibly hard just to dunk not only on Ubisoft, who we have voiced concerns about in the past, but never to that extent. And also people who like branded things.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I'm in agreement that like I probably don't want to cover my child in too many branded things, but like if people do. I'm not going to write an article about how crap they are, what bad parents they are.
What stupid parents, making a stupid child look stupid. But anyway, there we go. It is most accurately summed up, though, in Ubisoft yesterday to announce a series of Mr. Men and Little Miss books starring the murderers of Assassin's Creed. The Assassin's Creed series is about killing people. Like, there's a lot of stuff in between, but you're an assassin and you kill people. It seems like a match made in hell, really.
It does, doesn't it? Yeah.
Would you like to see them?
Oh, I'd love to.
Like to see them.
They'd already drawn them up, yeah.
Yeah, there's some art there. I'm sending it now. So you can see there's Ezio and Eivor.
Aww.
Brackets, female.
They've got the hoods and
Cassandra.
Everything.
Yeah, they have. I don't know why Cassandra's pink or why Eivor is blue. But I suppose there's no rhyme or reason to why any of the Mr. Men or Little Miss are the colours they are.
Wow. I love it.
There we go. So that's happening. If you want that, you can go buy it and then, you know, live in your stupid merch house, idiot.
Mr. Ezio. So weird.
Yeah. Let's move on, Peter.
It's time for question three, which says, hey guys, I recently rewatched all of season one of Love and Death and Robots. Highly recommend if you haven't seen it. And the final episode has the protagonist fighting an unwinnable fight against some beasties. Watching this reminded me of the amazing finale to Halo Reach, where the player fights in vain against a never-ending horde of enemies. But the way it was done and built up made the player feel like they could live if they just survived long enough. So, my question is this. Are there any mechanics or storytelling features, such as the Halo Reach ending, you don't think gets used enough? All the best, and keep up the amazing content. Callum at CJSTRAW93 on Twitter. Thank you, Callum.
Thank you, Callum.
Yeah, I should just say, actually, while we're on the subject, the Halo Reach finale is great. So you've completed all the levels, you get to the very end of the final level, and I think all of your teammates have died. The planet has been invaded by the Covenant.
Your favorite bit.
Yeah, you've bonded with them over the course of the campaign. And you reach this final area, and I don't know if you think that evac might be coming, or I think actually maybe you have established that evac is not coming, and you are just there on your own now. And yeah, an endless wave of enemies spawns in, and I think they balance really well the line between making you feel at first like you might be able to do this, but then not kind of. I find that sometimes when there's an unwinnable fight in a game, when you finally die and then it becomes clear that, oh, I was always going to die, it feels a bit like, oh, right, okay, fine, why didn't I just, you know, that felt a bit deceptive. But they balance it really well in that as you have this fight, for the only time that it ever happens in the game, if you take a hit about like halfway through or whatever, when you're starting to really flag, you get a shatter mark on your helmet, so mm-hmm. you can tell that something is happening now. And at that point, when you realize, oh, this is probably an unwinnable fight, it doesn't feel cheap. It feels like, oh no, this is really cinematic, and you know you're going down fighting. So it's a very well done moment, I think.
Yeah.
But to answer the question, mechanics that I wished were used more. One that I really liked, again, going back to kind of childhood days, not that it was much of a child-friendly game, was in Legacy of Kain: Soul Reaver, there was a mechanic that has been used since then, but I'd like to see it used even more, which is you could move between two different realities, two different kind of planes of existence. And as you did that, the world around you would twist and change shape in slightly different ways. So you might enter a room that has columns supporting the ceiling, going all the way up to the ceiling. And then if you like did the spell that allowed you to twist into like the demon realm, the columns would like maybe descend and start twisting a little bit. And then they would actually be a series of steps that you could hop up, you know, that you could like, they're no longer touching the ceiling. They've come down and you can climb onto them and jump around like stepping stones, things like that. And in the demon realm, you could swim through certain gates. You could just sort of phase through them. And water didn't exist, so you could jump into the bottom of pools, but just be able to walk around and move objects around and stuff. So it was really good for puzzle solving. And as I say, it's definitely been done since then. People have done that. But I'd still like to see more of it. I think it's really cool to see the world change around you like that. Especially if you return to an area, maybe, that you didn't actually see both of its forms, and then you come back to a familiar place and you're like, oh, wow, look how different it is now. I think that's a lot of fun. Yeah. So that was one that just immediately sprung to mind. But how about you?
I've got a couple of things noted down here. I don't actually cite, or I suppose I have not chosen to cite specific games where this happens, but I do like it, and I don't like it when it's overused, but I do like it when games flash back to like a month before the events of a game, or you know where it just plays with time in interesting ways. I suppose the worst example of that would be something like Beyond Two Souls, where it's just got no narrative structure whatsoever because it darts around all over the place. But if, say, in like a single-player narrative game, you would play for like 4 or 5 hours in one time period, and then you would jump back to see what happened before. Or, you know, there's another character who's like, you're not getting on with them, and you're like, why do they hate me? And they keep referring to something ambiguous and you don't know what it is.
Mm.
And then rather than that just being revealed to you in a cutscene, actually going back and playing it and experiencing why a situation is the way it is. If it's left sort of intentionally ambiguous because they've decided not to tell you what it is, there's always going to be a really nosy part of me that just wants that closure. And to see what it is, what happened. I suppose a lot of the two I've selected are largely, they're just from like a narrative perspective in terms of how a story is told rather than necessarily like a gameplay mechanic.
Yeah.
Or a storytelling feature, as Callum says. The other one, which was used quite famously, now that I think about it, in The Last of Us Part 2, is playing as the antagonist as a storytelling device.
Right.
Like,
yeah.
I'm not necessarily saying, oh, you get to play as Neo Cortex for a couple of levels in Crash 4. Again, I'm talking about like a narratively driven game as a storytelling device, being able to play as either someone on the other side or just experience what was going on over there to give the story a bit more context and, you know, not necessarily make the quote unquote villain or the antagonist sympathetic, but just to give
motivations.
That exactly, yeah. I think it's a really powerful tool, and again, both of these examples shouldn't be overused. But I'm always really interested when it happens. A game that sort of left me cold in that respect, and it didn't have to do it. And it's brilliant the way it is. The God of War reboot in 2016. There's a lot of ambiguity about what Kratos was up to between the events of God of War 3 and God of War, you know, leaping from the end of the Greek world to Nordic and Norse mythology and Norse gods and so on. Like, what was he doing there? I would love to know, and I'm sure they'll experience that, or they'll explore that probably in like a full game or something at some point, but there was a part of me throughout that was like, man, I wish I could I just want to just flash back for like an hour. Show me what happened.
Yeah.
Give me the cliff notes. I want to know. I want to see it. I want to play it. So I do love it when games do that.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I was just trying to think of like more narrative, you know, story features, as Callum said. And certainly, you know, he did ask for mechanics as well, but yeah, I don't know. There's so many. I can think of lots of things that I do like from a story perspective, but not that I feel are underused really at the moment, other than those that you've said, actually. But I don't know. I think fortunately, a lot of the cream rises to the top and becomes trendy, and people use the very best that we've got now. You know, just things like people conversing as you walk around, that can be nice. In Uncharted or Last of Us or whatever. I don't know. I'm looking forward to seeing what the current gen brings us in terms of that kind of thing. Whether there's anything that all the new technology will allow from a story point of view, not just from a gameplay and a visual point of view. Sometimes it's hard to think where things will go from the current state of affairs, but time will tell.
Yeah, I suppose so. Twisting it very slightly, mechanics-wise, bottomless storage, please. No weight limits, thank you.
That would be nice.
It's absolutely not, you know, Callum's given a fantastic example of both a mechanic and a storytelling feature in the Halo Reach ending, and I'm saying bottomless storage, please, which is not the same.
Storage telling features.
Yes, precisely. Yeah. But there we go. Let us know yours in the comments and so on. Shall we move on, Peter?
Let's. Yeah, it's time for something rather large, rather big. It's a discussion. It's a big discussion.
Big discussion time. Time for the big discussion. This week's big discussion comes from Charlie Brain, who says, "Hello, lovely boys. I just wondered what video game death hit you the hardest. For me, it was Dom in Gears of War, just because of the journey and arc he had been in with his wife and the effect that it had on him. Follow-up question, do you think a game needs a big death to be emotionally impactful? For example, Last of Us, Final Fantasy VII, Mass Effect, and many more." That's right, we're talking about death.
We are talking about death, everyone. We're going to really round off the podcast.
Talk about death.
In a positive way.
Peter, what's your favourite death?
Oh, I mean, I wasn't sure about this because there's just so many. I mean, How about, rather than us ending with a sad death, how about The Last of Us starting with a tragic death? Last of Us Part 1, or Last of Us, as it's just called.
Oh, my God, yeah.
You forget that that even happens. Devastating. Yeah, that was really just awful. They give you just enough kind of footage and story to see that, like, oh, they have a sweet relationship, and, oh, that's nice. And then, oh, okay, right, she's dead now. Okay, fine, no worries. I mean, the horse in Shadow of the Colossus, Argo, that was a tough one as well. As you might be able to tell, I couldn't choose one. So
here are a few of my favorite deaths.
Yeah, in some of my favorite games. And again, to take a very shallow cut into my list of games that I always give as answers in the podcast, when you think that Uncle Page, the pig man, has died in Beyond Good and Evil, well, he does die. It's just spoilers. He comes back to life, fortunately. But man, when he dies, that's pretty sad. You're like, you've been, the whole story really is to get there, get to the enemy base to save him, and I suppose some children who've been kidnapped, maybe. But we're really there just to save Uncle Pigman, and he's dead on arrival, which is pretty tragic. The music in that game as well is very well done. It's a gut-wrenching scene. So those were a few of mine, and there are many more that I won't say, partly because they might be, I don't know if they'll enter into your answer. So what's your favorite death?
I've got two favorite deaths. Mm-hmm. One of them is potentially a devastating loss. And in fact, I did experience all different versions of this potential death or lack of death to get the relevant trophies to earn the platinum at the time. Mass Effect 2. It's all building to this suicide mission at the end, and it's called the suicide mission. Mm-hmm. And the music for that is, like, there's a track, and it's brilliant, and it actually sounds like the slowed down, like, Doctor Who music when he's doing something like heroic.
Right, yeah.
Dun, 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 but it's, like, slowed down, and, oh, man, it's so good. It's just very powerful, because it's, that whole mission is not about messing up or like making the wrong call on the fly, although there is an element of that, but it's more about how close you are with your squad mates and the decisions you've made to mitigate squabbles and internal strife throughout the course of the game. And how they bounce off each other and how they don't get on or do get on, and so on and so forth. And so you can quite easily, even if you feel like you're doing everything right when it's time for the suicide mission itself, there's a very good chance that there will be a very poignant scene at the end where Commander Shepard stoically is standing in, like, the cargo bay of the Normandy, and there's just coffins there of, right, like, your fallen squad mates, and he's just, like, looking at them, and it's like, oh my God, I'm the worst commander ever.
It's my fault.
Why did I do this? And I definitely lost at least a couple on my first playthrough, and then as I said, in subsequent playthroughs, I made the decisions to lose all of them and lose none of them, and it's so nice keeping them all alive. But yeah, it was really well done, because it's all building to this potential of massive loss of life, and what Mass Effect 2 did so well was make your decisions feel like they mattered. Obviously, not so much with 3, but 2 certainly, and you are responsible for whether or not they die, and it's not always particularly obvious. The other one, of course, is Aerith's death in Final Fantasy VII. So I actually, and I did talk about it at the time last year on the podcast, I still welled up a little bit at Aerith's death when I replayed the remaster after finishing Remake Part 1. And it's just so, I think it's just so powerful in its simplicity, because there's no screaming voiceover. It's all in slow motion. Your Cloud is just too far away to do anything about it. And there's I think one of the most brilliant pieces of video game music ever, Aerith's theme, is just played on piano as it happens. And they are, even though this was sort of like a CG cutscene, they're basically, they're mega blocks people, right? Yes. Not, they don't look like real people.
Spade hands.
You, precisely. But I think that only proves that when done right, the stakes are massively raised by a death in a game. And Aerith's death happens way before the end of the game, so it only serves to motivate and rally you by losing her. You know, it makes you and the squad angry and furious at what Sephiroth has done, and you want revenge and you want to stop him even more than ever before because he's taken something from you. And so to move on to the next part of the question, deaths aren't mandatory, I don't think, for like the emotional resonance of a story.
Mm.
But when done right, good God, it's a strong factor, especially when the story is written well enough that you genuinely care about these characters. A little side one as well. Captain Price seemingly dying at the end of COD 4 was like a really big moment where it's like, oh my God, don't die. You're the cool one. And he slides you the pistol and you get to shoot the... Oh, it's awesome. It's so good. But what do you think? Are deaths mandatory?
I think that's the point, is that I don't think they are mandatory. I don't think you have to have a death to have a compelling story or be emotionally impactful. But there's no doubt that if done right, a death definitely leaves you with kind of a sort of gut punch beyond compare. Really, there's no other way to make you feel like, oh my God, than to have someone you care about die. One that I wasn't sure if you might bring up. I mean, I knew it wouldn't be your top one or two, but I wasn't sure how many you might mention. Was Aunt May in Marvel's Spider-Man.
Oh, yeah. That was a surprising one, actually.
It was. I didn't see that. That's exactly what I mean. It's like you don't see that coming at all. And I think that's probably an example of one that didn't have to be in there. As you say, it was a surprising one. It's not the kind of thing that I think was necessary for that story. But it's just that moment where they're just talking on the deathbed about, she's known he's Spider-Man for so long, or that Spider-Man is Peter Parker and stuff. And geez. And then sometimes, of course, if you've had someone around with you in the game for a very long period of time, and they maybe die halfway through, or even if you just lose them halfway through, that can make a whole lot of difference as well. I think playing Halo without Cortana in your head feels very different. It feels lonely. And a game I've not played, but Brothers, of course, Tale of Two Sons. Mm-hmm. I mean, that really does make the difference. That
physical
death,
loss.
Yeah, you get so used to playing with both, and then, oh, well, here I am now. This is strange. And, you know, very, what's the phrase? Conspicuous by their absence. You know?
That's Joseph Fares again.
It is, hero. Yeah. Will he give me $1,000 if I don't cry in that scene, possibly? it's perhaps not a surprising answer, but I don't think death is at all necessary. In fact, I saw a quote recently from George Lucas. It was an extract from story discussions they were having about, I think, Star Wars Episode 6, or maybe it was a prequels discussion in like the writing phase. And he was like arguing with one of the other kind of higher ups, and they were saying, oh, this character needs to die, like Luke or whoever needs to die by the end. And George Lucas was like, nah, like, I always hated that as a kid. Like, I'm not having any of the heroes die. I just hated it. Like, you know, it was annoying that you get invested in these characters and then they die when just at the end. Which I think I can see the reasoning there, particularly, I guess, for a younger audience. You know, it can just seem frustrating when a hero dies. But all that being said, if and when a character does die in a game or a film or a book, there's no doubt that it, provided it's done properly, it absolutely raises the emotional impact of that story. So,
yeah,
I think not mandatory, but definitely worth doing if done properly.
Absolutely. Well, let us know what you guys think in the comments and various other places, social media and so on. Peter is now going to tell you where you can find us.
We are doing videos and streams at youtube.com and twitch.tv/teamtriplejump. Remember, if you've got Amazon Prime, one of the benefits of that is a Twitch sub at no extra cost. So you can just use that on us if you like. You'll get all the usual benefits. When we're streaming on both YouTube and Twitch, we're modded by Lord Brotovich, Mads the Dactyl, and Trowling Badger. Thank you, team. Our social media is twitter.com and facebook.com/teamtriplejump. Luke Eldon looks after Facebook. Thank you, Luke. The Patreon is patreon.com/teamtriplejump. There are lots of rewards available, including, as Ben said at the start of the podcast, asking questions to us here today. Or, well, not today, it's too late now, but next week. Now we've got all kinds of handy-dandy links from our website, which is triplej.mup. That's triplej.mp. If you go to triplej.mup/discord, that'll send you straight to our Discord, which is modded by Jack, Joe, and Hollow Eyes. Thank you, team. If you go to triplej.mup/podcast, you can get the audio version of this podcast if you happen to be watching on YouTube right now. You can also go to, I don't know if you know this, Ben, triplej.mup/shop, and that now does redirect to triplejumpshop.com. So that's another handy link. But you can go to triplejumpshop.com as well if you like. That's our newer iteration of the shop. We've been in talks recently about the next drop of merch. So I think that will probably be in the next few weeks. Follow at triplejumpshop on Twitter for all the latest updates. And finally, triplej.mup/VODs. We'll send you to our YouTube channel dedicated to our VODs, where everything gets uploaded. And there are little weekly highlight packages edited by Pat. Thank you very, Pat. Thank you very much, Pat. The reason I stumbled there is because I'm choked up and heartbroken to say that, sadly, it's Pat's final week doing the weekly highlights for us. They've been very fun to watch. We are very grateful for your service to the channel, Pat. He's going on to bigger and better things. But they were much appreciated. And so everyone should go and check out that last one. You know, yes. Celebrate the excellent work that Pat has done.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Pat.
Thank you.
You can follow Peter on Instagram and Twitter at ThatPeterAustin and myself just on Twitter at Confused_Dude. We do lists every Tuesday, Wednesday and Thursday, streams every Monday, Thursday and Friday, Thursday being the joint stream, Blaze It on YouTube. The solo streams being on Twitch Monday and Friday. Worst Games Ever is fortnightly, Friday for patrons of a certain tier, Sunday for everyone else. The podcast is every Saturday. We do shows one every other week or something like that. Leave us a review on iTunes or your platform of choice. It helps something to do with algorithms. Peter.
Yeah.
Talk to me about Superman Ranked.
So those of you who listened to the podcast last week and listened probably to our streams as well, where we sometimes talk about upcoming content, we'll know that on Sunday, we released a video about Superman, every Superman game ranked from worst to best. Oh, wait, no, we didn't. Because I did done just literally forgot to upload it. We didn't get done by YouTube. We didn't accidentally leave like a boob in there that we had to quickly change. I didn't upload it and schedule it. So we could have then, obviously, when we realized, thrown it out on a Monday or a Tuesday or something, but we thought the best thing to do would be to kind of wait for a more of an event day of the week. We tend to do our slightly bigger videos on Fridays, Sundays, maybe Saturdays. So it's going to be this Friday, which, in fact, when this podcast goes out, it will already be out now. So it should now actually be available over on YouTube, every Superman game ranked from worst to best. Apologies for the hype that never was never paid off on last Sunday. But there you go.
Go watch it. And watch it. It's also... oh, my goodness. Now I'm getting choked up. It's also a Worst Games Ever week, which means that if you support us at a certain tier on Patreon, you will have already seen it because that goes out on Friday for patrons of a certain tier. It will be out for everyone else on Sunday. It's a weird one, though.
Oh, it's so weird. It's a really good one. It's like, we've had it for a while. We've got just a list of all the worst games we've got. And, you know, we kind of just pick one, have a quick look at it as the games master and think, yeah, this is okay. And I guess it's one that we've just neither of us have got round to having a quick survey of yet. Yeah. And then you discovered it, and wow, it's like top tier worst games ever material. So yeah, very don't want to overhype it, probably because I won't have remembered to upload it, but definitely give that a watch.
Yes, absolutely. Go and watch it. Mm. And with that, Peter, there's just time for you to talk about this week's sponsor once again.
Yeah, dentistry is, what is it, suspended? Hang on, let me just go to my text.
Go double check, yeah.
Dentistry has been suspended. All appointments have been cancelled until further notice. For more information, go to cavityrush.game.
Brilliant.
There you go.
That's a real URL. Well, there we are. Thank you so much for listening / watching, everybody. We will be back next week. Enjoy yourselves and look after yourselves too.
Indeed.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.